Well, hello, Bedford listeners. You've tuned in to Business IQ Radio. This is Andrea O'Brien, business advisor for the New Hampshire Small Business Development Center in Manchester and director of the Business Sustainability Program. In case you ever want your business to be more sustainable, give me a call. And I'm here with my fantastic co-host, Don Byrne. Don, how are you doing today?
Doing really well. Glad to be with you here today, Andrea. And I would agree if anybody's looking for some really good, useful resources and services, please do take advantage of the SBDC. And Andrea is our local person here operating out of the University of New Hampshire, Manchester. How would they find you, Andrea? Do you have a telephone number or a website they should go look at?
Yes.
You want to look you up?
Yes. NHSBDC.org.
Could you spell that?
Sure. NHSBDC.org. And it's an easy-to-use website, and there's a contact information there.
And your services are free?
No charge. Confidential. And I might add taxpayer-funded, so why not?
Why not?
Why not? And if I don't know the answer, I know someone who does. So it's good to have an advisor, someone who you can talk over things and maybe make some strategic decisions, or at least figure out how you're going to make those strategic decisions.
Well, it's the one example, as we used to say, the one thing money can't buy is experience. You have to earn it.
Yeah. Well, and we have several advisors, actually. The advisor that covers the Nashua area is Hollis McGuire, who is actually, I believe she won Business Advisor of the Year, Business Professional of the Year, but from New Hampshire Business Review.
And then you have other people, depending upon the business, if they're interested in the restaurant business or if they're interested in setting up manufacturing.
Marketing. Everyone has their area of specialty. And so it's good. It's a good organization, a good product.
And if people want to be green, if they want to make a commitment to a green business.
Sustainable. A sustainable business. Yeah.
You're the person.
Yes. And, you know, I want to mention that if you're a business and you have a socially responsible component to your business, or you're trying to launch a business with that in mind, based on that foundation, Social Venture Innovation Challenge is starting, and it's a contest of sorts, and the prize is $10,000, and it's run out of the University of New Hampshire Paul College. Dr. Fiona Wilson
Who's been on the show several times.
Yeah, she heads up the Carsey Institute of Public Policy. I may not have said that entirely right, but she is at the head of the Social Venture Innovation Challenge. And so take a look, everybody, and check that out. Again, it's for, you know, socially responsible, a business that has a social component to it.
And they don't have to be startup businesses either. They can be businesses that are established that are just looking at this area. And the same in terms of your advisory services, right? You handle everything from startups to mature businesses.
That's right. We do ask that you have under 500 employees or $5 million in revenue. So that's, you know, anything under that is
But it's absolutely true that businesses go through a development cycle where they hit a plateau, and sometimes you just need some help getting over that plateau and understanding. And how do I reach that next goal? And I know from having the opportunity to work with you on in several different contexts that you really do make yourself part of their staff. You're on there and you're really helping provide some strategic direction in terms of what are realistic goals. Do you have the cash flow to support this? You know, have you looked at, you know, what are the resources that you're going to need going forward? How do you position yourself in the market? I mean, you ask all the right questions that sometimes we just don't ask ourselves as business people.
Well, you can't ask it in a vacuum.
That's well said.
That's the problem. And a lot of the what I've seen from a lot of new entrepreneurs is they are thinking about their business from their perspective, but you really have to think about your business from your customer's perspective. You know, just because you like the color that you've chosen for your website doesn't mean it's what your customers are going to like. And that's very general.
And it's also true that you should look at it from the standpoint of your employees. And I think that's what brings us to today.
Yes, but before we go down that road,
okay.
I wanted to just mention to our listeners that on November 30th, we are having our annual government matchmaker event. And it's the registration is now open, 2018 New Hampshire Small Business Matchmaker.
And why would I, what's the value proposition? Why would I go to a government matchmaker program?
Well, if you're a small business and you're interested in contracting with the government, this is the event to attend.
By the way, the U.S. government is by far the largest purchaser of services in the world.
Right, and it's not...
Bar none.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a good market, and it's not just government agencies, it's also the prime contractors.
Ah. And some of who have different kinds of goals and set-asides for small businesses, for minority businesses, for veterans-owned businesses. So again, there may be some hooks that give you an advantage, and if you want to break into this business, sounds like this is one of the places you could go to
yeah.
learn about it.
Yep, and it's a little bit like speed dating. You actually get to sit down and connect with these representatives from either federal, state, and prime contractor individuals. So that's, just want to drive that home, that if you have a small business.
So again, that's business, November 30th. Where is it?
It'll be at the Manchester Community College.
Mm-hmm.
And we look forward to seeing you there. So.
Great.
So now to our show.
Okay.
You know, I'm a big sustainability advocate. I really think there's no other way to conduct business, you know, unless you embrace the sustainability hierarchy and concepts and components. And that involves three things, which I think I sound a little preachy, but I'll just tell you three things.
Well, we do play this on Sunday, so it's all right.
That's
to be
good.
A little
okay.
preachy.
Well, you know what? You've got your environmental footprint. You know, you have to care about the physical things you take up and the waste you create. Then you've got your social component, and that involves your employees and the community and your impact on all of that. And then you've got your economic impact. You know, both of those first two items I've mentioned have great economic impact if you don't do it right. So when it comes to regulatory details that you have to comply with, the first hurdle is, hey, don't, at the very least, don't get into trouble because you are ignorant of the regulations or just, you know, are neglecting to follow the rules. But that's still a big problem for a lot of small companies. They don't have the expertise in-house maybe to get it perfect. And that's where our guest today can really help.
And this is someone who is representing an organization that is free of charge, is my understanding.
Yes.
I don't understand how, you know, where their funding is and how they report and where they work. I think their offices are out in Keene, but they really provide a statewide service. People shouldn't think of them as regional out, you know, out west of here. They come and go wherever they need to, right?
Right. Oh, no, they cover the state. So I'll just tell you a little bit about our guest today. Brenda Clark is with the WorkWise program. And, you know, here in New Hampshire, the Department of Labor, we all think about the Department of Labor as regulating everything about our employees, but actually the federal government is the authorized government agency that regulates workplace safety. So the U.S. DOL, not the state DOL. But Brenda has and her crew, Teresa Ferrara is also there. She's an industrial hygienist, and I think so is Brenda. They are experts. They have so much experience in doing this that, you know, she'd be hard to replace.
Well, I think the other point that you're making here is it's better to talk to somebody who is here to help you and get ready for when you have to undergo an inspection, because eventually it's going to happen. And let's face it, every business could use improvement and people are going to find issues. But some of those, if you don't catch them early enough, can result in significant fines. I mean, there are safety violations and, and other kinds of violations. So I'll be very curious to hear, you know, what kinds of services that they actually offer and deliver and what they can do, and if they have any stories to tell us about, you know, their successes in this area. I bet they do, because, you know, again, we all, as you've rightly said, tend to look at the Department of Labor and OSHA as a big brother organization. And what they're really trying to do is they're trying to help us stay safe.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's not even the fines that can get you. Think how awful you would feel if you were the business owner and you had an employee that lost an eye, or you had a fatality and it could have been prevented. I mean, that is just a life-changing experience for the business owner, too. And it's just terrible for the fellow employees who might, one, want to jump ship. If it happened to my fellow employee, is it going to happen to me? Or two, you wouldn't want the incident to close your business altogether. And now you've got, you know, you've had loyal employees that have lost their jobs. So there's so many reasons why, especially in a low unemployment environment where you want to take good care of your employees. So,
yeah, that's, you know, it's really so true. And also having a safe work environment and being able to talk about this, I think people are getting smarter and smarter, and they ask questions even when they come to interview. They want to know. I mean, if you have a reputation of being a safe place, it works out. So,
well, that's, you know, millennials, nobody really, you know, nobody wants to work for a company that has a bad reputation.
Right.
I think studies have shown that the way you attract the worker, you know, the employment force that you're looking for,
right,
you know, is to actually, and it's going to sound like a cliche, but use your values to create value for your company, and
right,
use that value system where I care about my employees, so I'm going to do the right thing.
So you know more about this than I do. I'm guessing that somehow Brenda and her team are involved with the OSHA Roundtable. And can you, just for our audience, can you just tell them a little bit about what the OSHA Roundtable is if they're not familiar with it?
Yes. It's the first Tuesday of the month. And actually, I take that back. It's the second Tuesday of the month. And there's a consortium of planners and stakeholders that decide what the agendas will be like. Last month was millennials in the workforce. How do you communicate safety to millennials? And it's, you know, it's helpful.
You text it to them.
You text, exactly. You know, I mean, so we pick topics that are interesting. You know, I think, Don, you presented at
a couple of times, a few times,
the roundtable, and we talked about disaster planning. You know, is that an OSHA topic? Well, yeah, you want to keep your employees safe.
Sure, being able to get out of a place, and now with violence in the workplace, knowing how to, what to do if workplace violence breaks out, looking for some of the early indicators of workplace violence, all of these issues.
Yeah, I mean, opioid epidemic. You know, how do you have employees that have drug addiction problems? That can't be safe. And so
this is something that people can attend, and the agenda is set up on a regular basis. And again, I think...
And it's free.
Yeah, contribute, you know, people like Brenda and others contribute their time and expertise to presenting on these topics. So a good thing to do. So is there one coming up, or are they done for the year?
Yeah, there's one coming up November 13th, and it's on industrial hygiene, which is the science of, you know, chemical exposure, I think, to the employee. It looks at that specifically.
Great. Well, why don't we get Brenda in here, and let's talk a little bit about what she's doing, and ask her some questions and learn a little bit about WorkWise. So you're listening to BNH 105.1 Business IQ Radio with Don Byrne and with Andrea O'Brien, and soon our guest, Brenda Clark, who is an industrial hygienist with WorkWise.
Brenda, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us today. It's one of our important topics.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome, Brenda. Welcome to WBNH.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
So, you know, we try to get to know our guest a little bit before we delve into their area of expertise.
So we've had an FBI investigation conducted recently.
And we know all about you.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And so let's start off by just finding out how you made your way to New Hampshire.
That's not difficult. I've been in New Hampshire since I was 2 years old, and I'm not divulging how many years it's been that I've been here. But yes, I've spent my whole life here in New Hampshire. Went to high school here.
All in this area, the southern New Hampshire, or were you up north? Or?
Southern New Hampshire. I actually grew up in the Kingston, New Hampshire area, then went to the University of New Hampshire.
Yay!
Yep.
Shout out.
Wildcats. And then ended up going for a couple years to Maine, became a med tech up there, and then moved back to New Hampshire to do medical technology.
So you stayed away from the maniacs that are driving up there, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Right? Yep, definitely. And then came, started working at the state after a few years in the profession I'm still in today, and I've been doing this for 30 years, is working as an industrial hygienist for WorkWise NH.
And is that what you studied in school, was industrial hygiene?
Actually, it was medical technology through the university in New Hampshire. And it lent itself very well to this profession, dealing with the effects of chemicals on the human body and that type of thing. So,
and then there are other dimensions like safety, preventing industrial accidents, am I guessing right, in terms of?
Pretty darn close, yes. Covered. Yeah, it's keeping the employees safe and healthy during the work environment during their work day.
You know, unemployment is at an all-time low in the state. And so I think it really behooves an employer to, one, take good care of their employees. And it's a lot of information, isn't it? The regulations that they have to adhere to. So can you tell us a little bit about, without getting regulatory, the framework in which employers have to pay attention and...
Well, it's as you said, Andrea, the unemployment rate is extremely low, and it's tough for an employer to keep a handle on keeping his employees happy, staying in the work environment. And part of that is having employees become aware that, you know what, the employer really cares about me, wants to take care of me. And there can't be a better way, whether you're following OSHA regulations or just trying to keep your people happy and safe at the end of the day and showing you care. And we're finding that this is helping employers reduce their turnover rate, because we find if the employer has high turnover, that's when the employees start getting injured.
So let's focus right off the bat on your organization, WorkWise. Can you tell us what services you offer to and under what conditions businesses can access?
And where people find, are you up in Concord, or are you across the state, or where are you?
Wow, a lot of questions.
Yeah, tell us everything.
Tell all. WorkWise NH is a program that's ran through Keene State College. Actually, it's funded by the U.S. Department of Labor. There is a free safety and health consultation program for in each state in the United States.
Did you say free?
Free.
I love free.
And the reason being is back in the 1970s, when the OSHA Act was being signed in by Congress, they indicated that they wanted to make sure that all small employers who needed to comply with OSHA had some assistance. And they didn't have the wherewithal to hire and find full-time consultants, full-time safety and health staff. So they mandated that every state have this free on-site safety and health consultation program. And our focus is primarily for manufacturing, not so much for office environments. And we pretty much cover industries that manufacture products, construction companies, hospitals, healthcare, those type of industries.
So with the influx of technology companies here, I guess biotech, it's becoming even more relevant, but it may be causing you to think in different directions, because these are new technologies and new techniques that are being employed, right?
Well, exactly. I mean, in the 30 years, there was a lot of hands-on manufacturing. People were still making widgets in these big old factories
It's no longer just wearing steel-type shoes or a hard hat to go into workplaces, right?
Not just that, but in all honesty, they're still around. Two of my major clients are foundries, where people are pouring and heating up molten metal to 2,000 degrees, walking across a plant floor and pouring it into a mold. So that still is happening, believe it or not.
It sounds dangerous if you don't take the right precautions, right?
Exactly.
But why would a company call you? I mean, it's like asking the fox into the hen house. Tell us.
It's like I'm from the government and I'm here to help you.
Exactly.
Well, the good part about our program is we're completely confidential. There's a firewall between us and OSHA. So even though I'm an industrial hygienist, I look at the health issues in the company.
Don, good job.
Look at the health and items of a company. Also, we have other people who are trained in the safety elements, and we get the same training as the OSHA compliance people as they have out in Chicago. So what we do is we go in with our client and try to guide them as to what OSHA would be looking at for their industries and what programs they have to get implemented that OSHA would require. But we try to go beyond that. We try to get them to establish their own safety and health programs.
So you're a team member with them, more or less. You can become part of their health and safety team in a way.
In a way. We act as guiders. We don't develop the programs. We don't write the programs. We don't perform the training. But we do provide information and tools for them to go ahead and develop their own program. Initially, we sit down with them, review their programs, and then we give them a USB drive or other materials, pertinent materials to develop their safety and health program. And then we also conduct an actual audit, sort of like a mock OSHA audit.
Nice.
To look for health and safety and say, oh, if OSHA was in here, this machine's not guarded, they would cite you. Right now they're citing over $13,000 per citation, which is a lot of money for a small employer. So we tell them, this is what you need to fix it, but we don't issue that citation.
It's an ounce of prevention.
More than an ounce.
Right, giving you a pound of cure.
Can I ask a question along that line? I'm guessing that there are also some programs to assist people getting ready and maybe some grants to help them learn about this or actually acquire some equipment. Is that an area that you have the opportunity to advise them or point them to some directions on? I know that Andrea's organization helps people look at some of these opportunities, but I wonder if you don't have some expertise to share in that area.
Well, pretty much as I feel like we are the grant that's assisting them. They being the employer, we can't go in at the request of an employee. Employees have the right to call OSHA if they have serious safety and health concerns. But if an employer is looking for assistance, and in all honesty, we get a lot of calls based on that, we are able to provide them not just the information as to what OSHA would be looking for, but if they say, you know, we need assistance on training, how do we develop training programs, and, you know, how do we do develop programs for air testing if people say need frequent air testing for, say, lead exposures or silica. We provide them the information on that. But we get them started on the road. We're the first ones through the door to help them with this type of work, and we'll give them guidance if they need to continue such work.
And besides OSHA regulations, what about EPA regulations in terms of output? Because that's certainly a potentially hazardous work environment that they're working in. Can you advise them in that area?
Well, people sometimes they do ask about EPA, or in New Hampshire it's called Department of Environmental Services. And at one time we were under their umbrella. We never worked for them, but they held our grant. And as I said, now Keene State does. But with that, we were able to get to know a lot of the people in air resources and hazardous waste. And so we have contact information that I may not have the answers, know the exact rules or regulations for that, but we're pretty familiar with who the contact people are for those.
And there's always the SBDC Technical Assistance Program.
Absolutely.
Which is completely non-regulatory.
Except the Manchester office. You should avoid that office.
Okay. Well, listen, I think I learn best when I hear a story. So can you tell me, can you lay out a scenario, maybe keep it confidential, but like, you know, of a business that had impact, you know, that your program positively impacted them? And I'm putting you on the spot.
Okay. Well, this wasn't one that I directly dealt with. It was more my the other industrial hygienist.
Who's
in my
that?
Office. That's Teresa Ferrara. She's also the industrial hygienist with WorkWise. I should say, sorry, Andrea, I'm going to go off track
ahead.
A little bit. But in our office, there are five individuals. We have a project manager. There are two industrial hygienists, Teresa Ferrara and myself. There's a construction safety specialist. So, you know, anybody who's a contractor or doing construction work, we have Brady Keene. He's very versed in that. We'll go out to construction work sites to help with health and safety, which is right now the fatalities that are happening with OSHA. They're about 25% of them are from, or 20%, I should say, are from construction workers from fatalities per year. So it's an industry. They're catching on, but it's good that we have someone in our office that can help guide those people in that very hazardous industry.
Yeah, that's great. We're
in the process of hiring one more person for general industry, which is mostly our manufacturing facilities.
That's great. That's wonderful. So tell us how it might go. I mean, can you give us a scenario?
So you asked, there was one situation you asked about where we made a fairly large impact. Is there was a client who called us, and they had not a full amputation of a finger, but a slight amputation of a finger. And it was a metalworking shop where they use machinery to fabricate metal pieces or parts, which we see frequently in our business. And a lot of times, you know, employees, they're in a rush, or they just say, well, if I can just bypass this guard, let me just take this shortcut. And sure enough, this one got bit. It literally got bit. The finger got partially amputated. So as a result of that, OSHA did get involved. OSHA has a requirement that if there's an amputation, they have to call up federal OSHA within 24 hours. So OSHA got involved, looked at that scenario, and said, you know, you really should possibly get a full safety and health program so that employees aren't trying to bypass guards or take shortcuts. And as part of the services, it's WorkWise New Hampshire. Is not only will they help you with the guarding of your machinery, looking at the overall safety of your company, but try to establish a safety culture where you can, so that just you're not just trying to do Band-Aid approaches to fixing safety and health hazards, but you're getting employees involved with safety, that they want to bring up safety and health concerns and address them, kind of police themselves, and that you also have management listening to employees and trying to do everything possible to prevent injury and illnesses. So this one client took interest in our program. We worked with them for about a year or two, and now they are a participant in our Safety and Health Achievement Recognition Program, which is for companies not just being OSHA safe, but well above and beyond OSHA safe, where they're always looking to improve health and safety. It's always a continuum. It's never, okay, we're good today. We got a safety manual, but we're always looking for ways to make our workplace safer.
So they really made their mess their message. They really learned something from that mistake and have developed, it looks like, a culture of safety.
Right.
Yeah. You know, we've worked together a long time.
Yes.
Well, we've bumped into each other a long time. And we host a... You and your organization and my organization host a OSHA roundtable once a month.
Correct. Yep.
Which I've been to several times and think they're excellent.
Don actually presented. Yes.
Several times.
And they're excellent. And they're free.
And the breakfast is great.
And, yes.
And there's free breakfast. I have to say it's a good deal all the way around. And, you know, the what the roundtable does may not be technically oriented, you know, like we're not going to discuss regulation 4.2 subparagraph.
Right.
But it is always something that makes the workplace safer and maybe, you know, just a better workplace. And so that developing that culture of safety.
Right.
Is really important.
Right. And also to bring up on the roundtable, I think recently they had, I wasn't there for that one. They recently had a speaker on suicide in the workplace.
Yeah.
And I heard it was wonderfully done by Tim Irving out of the Region 1 OSHA office. And right now, I believe it's behind, I think number one is motor vehicle accidents for employees for fatalities in the country. And now it's suicide.
That's
in the workplace.
That's terrible.
So that OSHA doesn't have regulations on that. But yet OSHA recognizes, as we do in anybody in this
stress
field, that you need to look at these type of things. I mean, we need workers not to just be safe at work, which is very important, but also, you know, bring that home. You know, how is their family? Are they being safe at home, whether it's you know, just day-to-day living or doing projects around the house, just to hopefully carry it over.
Mm. Well, in various management classes that I've been part of and have attended, they do sometimes talk about leading indicators. You look at people. People begin staying extra late at work because they don't really want to go home. So if you're a workaholic, it may indicate something. Or you see people who never drank before coming in and you suspect that they are or whatever. This
right.
change in the lifestyle, change in the pattern is something that you should absolutely flag to your human resource or to some other professional
absolutely.
To be able to look into. And I'm guessing that's a little bit of what you guys cover in
we discuss these type of things. We sit down and discuss with employers, as I previously said, all the OSHA regulations, but we get into a lot more. We live in a tough society now. We've got active shooter events, issues like that. And so what we do is we also suggest to the employer they use other resources in addition to SBDC. We talk about you get to the fire departments, help you with your life safety codes. How do you prevent, what do you do in the event of a medical emergency? And now we're also suggesting they get in touch with the police department to talk about active shooter events. What are other businesses doing in the area and what can they do to prevent a horrible incident? Hopefully that will never occur.
Yeah. So when we talk about OSHA, we feel like it's a heavy regulatory burden, but this topic of workplace violence seems to be more prevalent, and some industries probably actually consider it a job hazard. For example, if you were the cashier at a convenience store mm-hmm. in a rough part of town, you're the expert here, but I know you're supposed to do a hazard analysis
right.
for each employee. Well, that's something that has to be addressed in this situation where you might be a gasoline convenience store clerk.
Exactly. And, OSHA, really, they haven't been pumping out the regulations. I mean, it takes forever, more than an act of Congress, for OSHA to get its regulations out there. So what they do is they've been very good and resourceful. If you go to the OSHA webpage, in addition to our program, OSHA itself has its own webpage that is very helpful, and they actually have documents out there on workplace violence, and it's geared towards, as Andrea said, the retail store environment, but also more importantly is, healthcare, emergency rooms. I mean, that's wow. when you really have issues with workplace violence. You just don't know what's coming through the door,
right.
Pharmacies, that type of thing. So, if I go into an industry that has these type of hazards, we bring that up. We discuss those also with them.
Yeah, we've had a show where we've had two policemen who actually left their career and have been doing advising about both workplace violence and dealing with drugs in the workplace. And, of course, this is a problem which is epidemic here in New Hampshire, is the opioid crisis breaking out.
Exactly.
And I'm guessing that these are also topics that come up in your reviews and discussions.
Yeah, we do. We do discuss some of that, but we also try to give people the resources. Where can you go to get more help on, other, tell them who may be other experts in the field who can provide more assistance in that topic.
Mm.
So it sounds like you deal mostly with mature businesses. This is not something that is for a startup.
Oh, absolutely not. Sorry.
Was that a good softball that I threw you there for that?
No, actually, I like dealing with the startups because to me, it looks like they're getting their foot into the door right away with safety. I feel like we're starting with a clean slate, okay? As you're starting your company growing, there's a company I just met with last week in Manchester. They do energy audits and buildings, and they're just starting up in I think it was January or of 2018, and try to lay the background as to what they need for safety and health. And so they can start, as the company is just beginning, to develop their safety and health programs as they're developing their business. Then it becomes an integral part of their business rather than kind of waiting until the company's been running for 3 or 4 years. It's kind of like the old bad habits have already been established, and it's hard to retrain people. So if you can start from the get-go, that's the way to go.
Plus, nobody is, unless they're just out of college, if people are coming from other organizations, they're bringing part of that culture with them. In fact, that's some of the value they bring, is you get a diverse culture from the experience set. But on the other hand, you also bring with you the bad habits, the bad tendencies, the wrong right. practices as well.
Right. I mean, what we try to do is, as I said, part of our job is to develop a safety and health culture and to get employees involved with health and safety. And in New Hampshire, it's required if you have 15 or more employees, you need a safety committee. And so with that, we strongly emphasize, take someone from every department, every shift, and get them involved because, you know, what the maintenance guy is doing out in the garage is different from what the person on the floor is making the, you know, welding or making manufacturing parts. And then third shift, we know that can be a totally different animal than first shift. So really, it's really important for management to get their employees involved in health and safety.
You're listening to WBNH 105.1, and our guest today is industrial hygienist Brenda Clark from the WorkWise program from Keene State College. And she's talking about this free, easy-to-access technical assistance around workplace safety and, you know, how important it is for the business community. You know, when I get a phone call from a company that wants to work on that part of their business, like how do we become safer? Where do I start? You know, one of the things I tell them to do, and tell me if you think this is a good idea, I go to the, first of all, I go to the OSHA website and I plug in their SIC code, their industry code, to see what the most frequently cited violations are for that industry. What do you think about that?
That's great. Especially, I have just recently with that startup company, I did just that for them. It's like, okay, it's like the Jay Leno top 10 list. Okay, number one is this, number two, and then usually it's the top 10. And when you look through across manufacturing, it's all pretty much similar. A lot of it has to do with chemical hazard communication, lockout, tagout, use of personal protective equipment.
Can you tell us, what is hazard communication? What is that?
Chemical hazard communication, which almost every employer needs to comply with, is if people are using chemicals more than household use, like say if you're using Windex, but you're not using just a bottle a month, you're using a case a month. What you need to do is train your employees on the hazards of the chemicals and obtain what we call safety data sheets that tell you what's in the chemical and have a written program. So that's just an example of one of the many programs we go over with employers on how to comply. We also give employers a USB drive that has sample safety and health programs. So we don't just go in and say, oh, you need a chemical hazard communication program, read about it and develop one. We try to give them a model fill-in-the-blank program that they can add into their own programs, and it gives them a good head start on what to do to comply. And we're not looking for the big, thick safety manual sitting on the shelf that, you know, the dust gets blown off when OSHA shows up. We're looking for a very short, to-the-point program so that if an employer leaves or the safety manager or whoever's in charge of safety leaves, the next person can pick it up and says, oh, yeah, this is who's in charge of making sure we get the safety data sheets for our company.
And this gets to be complicated. One of the things that I help do is run disaster recovery crisis management programs for companies. We recently did one for a bank. And what we did was we simulated in the data center a glycol leak. Okay. And we said, do you have a manufacturer's data sheet? Is this a hazmat issue? What should people go to the – I mean, that was part of our exercise with them. And they had no idea because they outsourced a lot of that work.
Right.
And they know banking very well, but they don't know the other parts of their business because there's so much outsourcing going on. People are dependent on others who are dependent on others who are dependent on others.
Right.
And it's not clear. And we keep telling them, you can delegate responsibility. You can delegate authority, but not responsibility. You're still responsible for understanding these issues. Right. And so I smile when you said a lot of people don't realize this. It is just still a foreign term to so many executives that they just don't realize it.
Right, right. Some people, and I'm sure it's a very good service, is their HR. Some people outsource human resources. And part of that is they can outsource their safety. Well, I have no problem with that if they're going to be working hand in hand with the company to develop the safety programs, do the training, and in some instances, as you indicated, run drills. We strongly encourage companies, if you have an emergency action plan, you say, well, the policy is everybody get out. Do you run drills to make sure everybody knows their responsibilities and they're properly evacuating?
By the way, that's another tool that is an online tool on the OSHA website, that there's a template that will automatically create the tool for the emergency action plan for you. So people should, if you're not familiar with what we're talking about, just go to the OSHA website and type in emergency action plan. It'll take you to a place where it'll put it together and tell you the requirements, which are required for anybody with 10 or more employees to have a written plan.
For a written plan, right. Everybody needs a plan, but you're correct. But with 10 or more, you need a written plan.
Is that a DOL requirement or a...
That's a federal OSHA requirement.
Federal, but and I think...
29 CFR 1910.30 or something?
38.
Whoa.
Pretty
close.
Whoa, that's pretty good. But I mean, so we also have not only... Well, we have a federal and state government that regulate business and that employee interface. In New Hampshire, we've got the DOL. Do they have any responsibility here?
What they primarily do is for the private sector, or for all companies, private and public sector. And just let me back up a little bit quickly, say OSHA just covers the private sector. Public employees, municipalities, they don't have a jurisdiction. That's where the New Hampshire Department of Labor's safety rules come into play. Technically, my understanding is the New Hampshire Department of Labor rules are they'll cover private and public to make sure everybody with 15 or more employees has a safety program, written safety program, files a safety summary form, and has a safety committee. But as far as safety and health regulations, pretty much OSHA covers the private sector, and then it's the New Hampshire Department of Labor covers the public sector, such as your maintenance garages for DOT and so on.
So did I understand properly before, Brenda, when you said you are funded through the state? Is that how you're funded? Or where are, do you get some money federally? Or
what we are is the federal government, as part of that stipulation, as I said, for the OSHA Act, each state has to have a free consultation program, is the federal government will provide states with funding for this program. And that funding for New Hampshire goes to Keene State College. There is a little bit of a match that Keene State comes up with to fund us. But most of the money comes from the U.S. Department of Labor. So even with that being said, again, there's a firewall between us and OSHA. OSHA has no idea where we go, nor does Keene State College. We just work strictly confidentially with the client. So whatever our findings are, we discuss that with the client. They get back to us as to what they're doing to correct the hazards. And then we close out our files. And we're always available even before, after all is said and done with our clients.
Yeah, and I understand the confidentiality. It wasn't what I was actually leaning towards is people are paying for this, so why not use it?
Right.
You know, I mean,
Their tax dollars at work.
Yeah, you're already paying for it, so reach out and make use of this kind of a service, sure.
Exactly. You know, I like the fact that you mentioned that it's housed out of Keene State because Keene State College has a major, which revolves around industrial safety. Is that right?
That's right. Actually, we're very happy to be working with Keene State College, which came about 7 years ago. Keene State College picked up our program, and we've been working with them ever since. And it's really good because we've actually obtained two or three really good employees through their internship program. We had some people retire, and now we got new young blood, 20-year-olds, and it's excellent. It's good to have them there. We're literally, our offices are on the campus, so we interact with professors, students. Occasionally, we get to take them out with us in the field, and it's invaluable. I've had many students say, wow, so this is what it's really like, getting away from the books.
Well, that's great that you give them an opportunity. Can businesses approach the WorkWise program at Keene or the professors at Keene and maybe get an intern for the summer if they don't want to, you know, if they have a little project they want to work on?
Well, it's funny you should say that because sometimes I'm talking to a client and sometimes it can be an hour, hour and a half, and especially if they're not familiar with the OSHA regulations, I get what I call is the deer in the headlight look. And I said, you know what, we can take a step back here. And Keene has some interns. So what we could do is, you know, if you want to, we give them the resources if they want to have a safety intern. And I would say, you know, maybe you want to hire them for the summer to work on lockout tagout, which would be meaning ways to safely shut down machinery so people can work on it and not get amputated or electrocuted. You can maybe hire a student to work on developing your program, maybe developing your training program. Review your programs to see if the written policies and procedures are adequate. So it is a win-win, and we like giving the students that opportunity.
I'm guessing there's some seasonality to your business because of the seasonality of businesses in New Hampshire. I'm thinking about the resorts up north in terms of, you know, the safety associated with the skiing business and the hospitality industry. Am I, you know, cooking and things of that nature? I'm guessing that that, you know, that affects you and has an impact on your workload over the course of the year.
You would think it would, but even with construction nowadays, you see it's all year round. So in all honesty, you know, we may get some waves of highs and lows, you know, when we're busy, not as busy. But in all honesty, no, nothing seasonal.
So then where do we stand as a state in terms of safety? How do we rate? There must be some studies that have been done in comparison. I'm hoping you're going to tell me we're not, you know, number 49 out of 48.
You know what? That's a great question. I was just thinking of that myself.
Well, I saw it on your forehead and I thought I'd steal that.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I had the answer. That would probably be through the New Hampshire Department of Labor. What they do is keep workers' comp records. And I don't have that information on me. But, you know, I just want to say that.
I'm going to look it up.
Okay. but what I want to just, while Andrea is looking that up, I just want to say that a lot of times we can get called in for a number of different reasons. And one could be, you know, a company, as I explained about that Sharp company, had a OSHA inspection. And then OSHA suggests, hey, you should really have a full safety and health inspection. Here is WorkWise. But we're finding more and more companies on their own volition are calling us to come in and help them with safety and health. They realize it's also a competitive world, not just retaining employees, but their companies that they're working for, making product for. It's sort of like ISO 9001, where they're looking for quality in the companies that they're purchasing their products from. And one of those is safety and health. So they're saying, you know what? So-and-so company is looking for our safety and health program. We got to ramp it up here. So we're getting a lot of companies calling us for that reason.
I'm not going to be able to find it. I keep hearing this word workers' comp come up. So tell us how workers' comp ties into all this health and safety.
Well, they have, and I don't want to speak too much to it because it's through the New Hampshire Department of Labor, and we're mostly focused on OSHA, New Hampshire, U.S. Department of Labor. But the New Hampshire Department of Labor does, through its workers' comp program or bureau, have a safety element. And it was to help reduce the costs of workers' comp in the state of New Hampshire at one point. So the intent was that companies with 15 or more employees develop these safety and health programs and safety committees. It was helped to reduce the injury and illness rates through workers' comp. OSHA has a different mechanism for measuring worker safety and health. It's through OSHA 300 logs. So companies retain those for a year. If someone gets injured, it gets noted on this log. And then once a year, this data gets submitted to OSHA if they have 20 or more employees. But
it's tied in. I mean, how? Not only is it nice to take care of your employees, but you pay through not only fines that might be levied against you during an accident, but your workers' comp is going to go
up. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, when you talk about being proactive in safety, there's a cost savings all around. Like you said, Andrea, workers' comp rates obviously are going to go down if people's MOD rates, which is the measure for workers' comp, is one or below. So, and also when you talk about costs associated with injuries, you know, OSHA also on its webpage has a whole page on direct costs. It's like the tip of the iceberg. It's the indirect costs that are adding up. Because you've got to think about, you've got to retrain employees. Other employees have to work overtime to cover for the person who's out injured. So there are a lot of costs associated with any type of injury.
So where are we going in terms of safety in the state? From your experience, is it getting better? Is it getting the same? Are we growing? Are we outstripping it in terms of the business? Because a lot of entrepreneurship taking place and a lot of things being launched. Are we holding pace? Here's the chance to say you really need more staff, I guess.
I was going to say, are you super busy?
Right now we're holding our own. We're not. Other states have a backlog much more significant than ours. So we're responding pretty well. And I think it's kind of something we've always done with our program, but we've noticed that with the newer people coming out of Keene State College, that there's this big focus on safety and health management systems. And that has been the way that we are presenting that more upfront to the employer. So we'll talk about, okay, you need this program for doing this activity, or these are the guards, safeguards you need to put in place. But overall, how do you get your whole corporation to think safety as part of a day-in and day-out activity? Hmm. And these safety and health management systems, we're trying to give employers more tools to start implementing that type of thing so that safety becomes definitely a strong part of their culture.
You know, I had seen a statistic once that said in 1970, and I'm going to ask you to guess, Don.
Wait, why are you looking at me as if I remember Don, that far back? I was a child.
What was an annual number for fatalities in 1970?
Due to industrial accidents?
Yes.
86,215.
That's too much. 14,000.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Well, I didn't convert from metric.
But
I should have done a metric convention.
That's 14,000 people that went off to work.
Yeah,
that
didn't come back.
That didn't come home and didn't get to say goodbye.
And that was 38 per day.
38, right.
Right now, it's down to, in 2016, it has dropped to 5,190, but it's still 14 people a day. 14 people a day, which, again, is too much.
Plus, and if you're telling us that a lot of those are due to suicides, one is going to expect that those are more preventable in some sense with some kind of intervention.
Right. Well, actually, Dr. Michaels, who used to be the area director for, let me get his title right. He was the assistant secretary of labor for OSHA. He said, making a living shouldn't have to cost you your life. Workplace fatalities, injuries, and illnesses are preventable. Safe jobs happen because employers make the choice to fulfill their responsibilities and protect their workers. And I think what he says hits it right on the head.
Right.
Do your job, but do your job safely.
Right. Right.
I feel as though, we've kind of gone through this, or we are, as a business community, we talk a lot about social responsibility and how businesses need to be socially responsible because, one, the customers expect it.
Right.
Nobody wants to shop at a clothing store that uses a sweatshop as its manufacturing location, right? So the consumer wants to know, I think, that, I mean, it's bad publicity to hear that you've lost an employee overnight.
Right.
And it's just, as Brenda was saying, there's a quality dividend that comes from having a safe workplace. It's a productivity dividend. And as a consumer, the quality of the product that you get, you're just going to feel better about it. I mean, if I know that they're following all the safety rules and regulations, they're not taking shortcuts when they're preparing my meals or if they're doing some other things, if they're putting materials together that I'm going, like if they build a bicycle for me and they're not cutting corners, that just gives you a little bit more confidence. I mean, people pay for quality. They're willing to pay for quality.
Right.
Well, it's an important topic that, and the resources available to businesses, not everybody knows about you.
Right. A lot of people call us the best kept secret, but I hope that happens less and less. So absolutely, you can find us on Keene's website. It's keene.edu/workwisenh.
And what is the backlog to get a hold of somebody if they want an audit done? Are you guys booking months out, weeks out, days out?
I'd say 2 months.
2 months, yeah.
That's,
so get in,
that's a good backlog.
Get in the queue now.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Get in the queue now.
Exactly.
Why wait before the Christmas rush? Let's get in
well,
and get it.
Don't wait until you have an accident.
Right, sure. And are there any expected changes to the laws or regulations? We're at the end of the show. We're towards the end of the show now. We're wondering if, look into your crystal ball and what do you see over the next couple of few years? Are things going to change? Do you expect? Are you hearing any rumblings from OSHA or other places about changes?
Right. No, I haven't. Years ago, they tried to ergonomic standard. I don't really see that coming back. back up anytime soon. They actually just put out a couple of new standards that are pretty significant. Silica, beryllium, they reworked their fall standard to encompass general industry so that, you know, they reduce the risk of fall injuries or deaths. So I can't think of anything right now off the top of my head that's on the near horizon for OSHA. But, you know, I'm pleased with OSHA in them looking at other things that are causing, you know, like the suicide prevention and workplace violence that we discussed. They're still looking to address those issues, even though they may not be looking to put a standard out anytime soon.
Well, Brenda Clark with WorkWise Industrial Hygienist, thank you very much. This is very informative. I learned a lot of good things. In fact, I'm going to go look up the SIC code for the SBDC and see what they're getting cited for mostly. From OSHA. I'm going to go to the OSHA website and see what all the SBDCs are getting cited for.
I'd like to mention the upcoming roundtable.
Yes, please do. Yeah.
November 13th, OSHA roundtable, industrial hygiene evaluation methods.
There you go.
Evaluating chemical exposure in the workplace. If you're a business.
Where is that going to be held?
It's going to be held at the OSHA Education Center, which is 1050 Perimeter Road. And you have to register. So go to our website to register.
And that's in Manchester.
Yes.
Yep.
And my co-worker, Teresa Ferrara, will be co-presenting that presentation.
Are you presenting that?
No, Teresa Ferrara, my co-worker.
Oh, okay. Who else is presenting? Do you know?
Susan from Colin Company.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually something that Andrea has some background in because she started out as a chemist doing environmental kind of work, and so she knows something about chemistry and chemicals and industrial chemicals, et cetera.
I happened to go through my official chemistry training before they had industrial hygiene.
Before they had industry?
Before they had industrial hygiene. I mean, we used to wash our hands in benzene and all that. You know, it was terrible. I know. We didn't care.
Well, great. Well, Brenda, thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Enjoyed it.
We really, we wish you all the best of luck, and thanks for what you're doing, because you're helping to make our community, including the people here in Bedford, safer, and that's much appreciated.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Well, what I'd like to do is, as we do at the end of every show, I'd like to turn to my co-hostess here and say, you know, we've heard a lot of good information from Brenda. We've gotten a lot of words of wisdom. Andrea, do you possibly have some words of wisdom that you can share with our listeners here on 105.1 WBNH and the Business IQ radio show? Do you have something that you can leave them with, a pearl or two?
It's really the cornerstone of a lot of business, and that is, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.